This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily via the internet address www.parstoday.com/en. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Intelsat 902, and Eutelsat satellite, as well as via internet. You can also listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for more details.
And now we enlighten you with Ayah 260 to 263 of Surah Baqarah, recited by Shahriyar Parhizgar.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. وَإِذْ قَالَ إِبْرَاهِيمُ رَبِّ أَرِنِي كَيْفَ تُحْيِي الْمَوْتَى قَالَ أَوَلَمْ تُؤْمِنْ قَالَ بَلَى وَلَكِنْ لِيَطْمَئِنَّ قَلْبِي قال فخذ أربعة من الطير فصرهن إليك ثم اجعل على كل جبل منهن جزءا ثم ادعهن يأتينك سعيا واعلم أن الله عزيز حكيم مثل الذين ينفقون أموالهم في سبيل الله كمثل حبة أنبتت سبع سنابل في كل سنبلة مئة حبة والله يضاعف لمن يشاء والله واسع عليم الذين ينفقون أموالهم في سبيل الله ثم لا يتبعون ما أنفقوا منا ولا أذى لهم أجرهم عند ربهم ولا خوف عليهم ولا هم يحزنون قول معروف ومغفرة خير من صدقة يتبعها أذى والله غني حليم.
In the name of Allah, and when Abraham said, My Lord, show me how you revive the dead. He said, Do you not believe? He said, Yes, indeed, but in order that my heart may be at rest. He said, Take four of the birds, then cut them into pieces, and place a part of them on every mountain. Then call them, they will come to you, hastening, and know that Allah is Almighty and All-Wise. Those who spend their wealth in the way of Allah and then do not follow what they have spent with reproaches and affronts, They shall have their reward near their Lord, and they will have no fear, nor will they grieve. An honorable word with pardon is better than a charity followed by affront, and Allah is all-sufficient, most forbearing.
This is the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet, FM, and satellites. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAD 5 and Intelsat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is iranradio.ir. And now you can listen to Arabi English radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box number 19395 6767 Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Us now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Hello. The Yemeni resistance against Western aggression is a testament to the enduring spirit of a nation determined to defend its sovereignty and support its allies. Yemen has faced relentless airstrikes and blockades, exacerbating an already dire humanitarian crisis caused by a years-long Saudi-led war that subsided for a while. Despite these challenges, Yemeni armed forces have continued to launch operations in solidarity with Palestine, targeting Israeli interests and demonstrating unwavering resolve. This resistance is not merely a reaction to external aggression, but a broader struggle against Western hegemony and intervention in the region. The Yemeni people's commitment to their cause, even in the face of overwhelming odds, highlights the complex dynamics of power and resistance in the Middle East. Welcome to another Spotlight on Press TV. I am Bahman Nouri, your host. Allow me to introduce my guests. Fahima Mohammed, broadcaster and commentator from London. And Said Mohsen Abbas, journalist and political commentator, also joining us from London. Very good to have you, Fahima. I'm going to start with you. Pleasure to have you on the program. I'm going to start with the most recent events. US just declared earlier today that they have targeted 12 targets within the Yemeni country, all infrastructure, buildings, all the sorts of resource centers and everything. What's the goal of the US and Israel in attacking Yemen right now?
Their goal is because Yemen's stance in resisting Western aggression and supporting the Palestinian cause is deeply rooted in its historical, cultural, and political identity. Despite so much hardships that has been devastating from conflict in Yemen, they have consistently articulated their solidarity with Palestine and opposing the Western-backed policies perceived as imperialistic and also unjust in the Middle East. So this is something that is completely going to be continuous, and Yemen has generally said that as long as Palestine is being a target and the continuous of genocide happens, they will continue with their struggle and they will also defend Palestine from their side. Yemen has been a focal point even in geographical struggle, particularly since the onset of the Saudi-led coalition intervention in 2015. And this coalition, supported by Western powers such as the United States, United Kingdom, France, has waged brutal war under the pretext of restoring the international recognized Yemeni government. So, however, many Yemenis and global observers see the conflict as a manifestation of Western imperialism aimed at securing strategic interests, such controlling critical shipping routes like the Bab el-Mandeb Strait and countering regional actors. So I would say that the Yemeni resistance has a spearheaded group like Ansarullah, known as the Houthis, has framed their struggle for a fight against foreign intervention and domination. And this resistance is an anti-colonial and anti-imperialistic sentiment that is widespread amongst the region, which is a general and direct sort of resistance to Israel and the US for their power to control the region. So it's a direct conflict, and they will continuously have this ongoing, not just by days. We can see the intensity happening by the hour in the last weeks between Yemen and Israel, and its targets towards Israel is hedging closer and closer to dangerous territories, which was perceived before.
Right. Very good to see you again, Sayed Mohsen. What do you think about this? Because the US, Israel, and also the mainstream media in the West, the collective West I'm talking about, are all claiming that Yemen is a target, it's a military target. But at the same time, they are targeting ports and infrastructure, power stations in the country. So what does that mean regarding the humanitarian situation there?
Well, first of all, the Americans and the Israelis, by default, the British and the Saudis have all been doing this for over a decade to Yemen and the Ansarullah. They've been targeting humanitarian, if you like, infrastructure for a very, very long time. This is nothing new. They've obviously, in the records, if you look carefully, you'll see that they didn't spare weddings. They didn't spare even funerals. They didn't spare destroying the waterwork infrastructure, spreading cholera, enforcing famine. If it weren't for Hodeidah, the one port which does give the Yemeni Ansarullah and the Yemeni people access, because don't forget, 80% of the Yemeni population is under Ansarullah jurisdiction and governance. So basically, the war on Yemen has had several phases, but this is just another phase. But this one is there because Yemen has taken a moral stand. Yemen, of all the nations that have gone up against Israel because of the Gaza genocide, are probably the most authentic and sincere in a consistent position against Israel. And what they've done is they've consistently supported the Palestinian people in their struggle for liberation. And indeed, they've done it by practically, first of all, since October the 7th, really, very soon afterwards, they launched ballistic missiles at Israel. They then followed that up with a systematic targeting of ships that were taking aid and military equipment to Israel, to the point where they ultimately shut down the Eilat port through their efforts, and they've managed to make life very, very difficult for Israel. The IMF, which does the number count of its ships, has shown that since December 23, the number of ships that are allowed to go through the Bab el-Mandeb, controlled by the Ansarullah, is halved. There's half the number. And Eilat port has gone into bankruptcy. Israel has had to divert all its supplies from that direction, away from the Suez, and out into the Cape of Good Hope, and go the long way round to the Mediterranean. So it's caused Israel a huge headache. It's given the Israelis a lot to think about, and they've now got the Americans backing to come in and target, as you said, very importantly, civilian targets. they can't really find where the Yemeni military targets are necessarily, because Yemen's terrain is not like Gaza. They have mountains, they have all sorts of places where most of their military hardware is stored, and most of their weapons capability and ballistic missile capability is from those ports and those stations, which Israel at the moment has no real idea of. But they're trying to kick off a sustained campaign, I think, and the Americans followed up the Israeli attack from a few days ago on Sana'a with what I think I understand is at least 12 raids, and they've had production storage facilities. They think they reckon they've hit command and control facilities and things which and facilities which have held conventional weapons. The Ansarullah are saying nothing of the kind. They're hitting civilian targets. And usually this is true, because Israel and America tend to want to play a psychological war with the people of Yemen to persuade right. them not to back the Ansarullah.
Now, Fahima, the Israeli envoy to the UN always says that the Yemenis are the aggressor. They opened fire on Israel first. The same kind of rhetoric that we heard him say and use on Lebanon. So what would be the right response to that? What's your take on this?
There is always the same rhetoric when it comes from Israel, and they are obviously still defending themselves, and they're doing it on several fronts now, using the same rhetoric and propaganda, and it's not working, as we see the worldwide outrage. And this is the first time ever that, because of what's happened since October the 7th, that everyone has sided with the Palestinians. And it's not just, you know, the Muslims, it is worldwide. People that have never even had the insight of what's happening in Gaza has now opened their eyes, and they have lost in many ways a lot of the support that they have had. And people that are in support of Israel right now is probably for political or monetary gain, and there's no real moral in supporting Israel. So they will continue with their rhetoric in order to say what they need to say in order to comply with certain international laws and rules, just like how in the UK they slightly withheld some of their arms, you know, towards Israel just to comply with certain rulings. But at the end of the day, there is full support from their allies, the US and the UK, as well as certain countries in the Europe. But again, they've been given so much, you know, military support, aid and money, which helps them continue, but it still doesn't make sense. They are still land grabbing, whether not just in the West Bank, but also now we've seen in Syria, and they are continuing their plan to expand. But they're also failing deeply economically in Israel itself. And now even with the airport themselves in Israel, Ben Gvir Airport has also had sort of sirens, and people have been trying to shelter over the last 2 days, which has never really happened before, especially near Tel Aviv, and where civilians themselves have been attacked. They are under immense pressure economically and investment-wise, as well as their own people have not been able to return to the north like they planned. That's why they went into Lebanon in the first place. So they haven't actually succeeded in getting their hostages, you know, dismantling any of the access, whether it was Hamas or anywhere else. And now with the fight with Yemen, it's even harder because they're not based where in the Middle East as Hezbollah was in Lebanon. So we see that there is much more pressure on Israel. They do not have the manpower, but they do have the sort of like backing of the US. And now with Trump coming in 20th of January inauguration, they have amount of time to complete what they have. But again, it's not in line with any sort of international law, humanitarian, or anything like that. And people are waking up to it now, especially with the arrest warrants for them from the ICJ. We will see what happens and if that is actually going to be implemented. But again, we are seeing unfortunate, devastating results from this continuation, but there's no likelihood of ceasefire in any instance in the coming weeks or months.
Said Mohsen, as Fahima just said, people are waking up to this fact, but at the same time, we're seeing that even in Tel Aviv, every week thousands of people gather in the streets of Tel Aviv demanding a peace deal with Hamas to secure the release of their captives. And we do not see any success in that for the Israelis. They do not even initiate a true conversation to get that. So it could be said that the Yemen war is just a war for the sake of war in order to prolong Netanyahu's term in office.
Yes, the war definitely helps the current genocidal establishment, but the reality is that Israel's calculating the destruction of the axis of resistance. They've been buoyed by what they've seen happen in Syria, so they think that's a huge success, because they're not necessarily the ones who did that. Thanks to other regional forces, that situation has occurred, but it's given them a lift. It's a given Netanyahu a kind of a mandate to say, okay, I should go after all of the axis of resistance and destroy it once and for all. And Yemen is a huge pillar of the axis of resistance. It's probably, arguably, the number one frontline force now, because they've also got an independence. There's something which also is often said about Yemen, that they're proxies of the Islamic Republic of Iran. Far from it. The Yemeni Ansarullah are, at best, you could describe it as an ally, because they have their own independent policies. They nurture relations with Russia. They've got a stronger relationship with the Hash-Shahabi over the last month or two. They've been doing joint military operations with them. They have a reach into Africa as well. And they have their own, there's their own geopolitical situation internally, because what Israel is also being now doing, the Americans are doing, is they're trying to incite forces within Yemen, a lot of them Al-Qaeda, ISIS linked, and others to be backed by the UAE to again begin a civil war via the secessionist groups in of the Southern Transitional Council. So there's a plot afoot now to try and get ground forces to take on Ansarullah in Yemen as well. All of this is to break the power of the axis, something which Netanyahu, not just for his own sake, I think Israel generally has got this notion, and the Americans, that if they don't act now against the axis of resistance, given its powerful capabilities already, that say they were to try and do it 5-10 years down the line, it'll be even more difficult for them to do so. And they're gravitating towards Yemen as their next target. Iraq could be the next one, and certainly Iran is on their menu. It won't be quite as easy as what happened in Syria, I'm afraid. The situation in Syria was very unique, and we still don't know the reality absolutely of why it collapsed in the way it did so quickly, and which way Syria will go. Yemen is not Syria. Yemen has a 150 to 200,000 strong army. They are hugely capable fighters. They've shown that. And I think any ground operation that the Israelis or the Americans plan is doomed to failure. The aerial attacks in the past have proven to be a failure, because they did them in July 2024 with Operation Long Arm, which the Israelis carried out a 2,000-kilometer fighter jet attack. And again, what did it do? Fuel tanks in Hodeidah was the maximum they could hit, and civilian targets. So I'm afraid I don't see them bringing down Yemen as easily as they might consider. And nonetheless, I think they're going to give it a go by certainly increasing these attacks.
Fahim, as Said Mohsen also mentioned, the characteristics of the Yemeni territory makes it very difficult for the Western powers to just ruin the military infrastructure and facilities by just airstrikes. And as Said Mohsen also said, that they probably need a sustained set of attacks, range of attacks that will take, we do not know how long. But do you think this is going to stop the will of the Yemenis, who have surprised the world by the Brazilians? Is this going to stop the Houthis and the Yemenis from acting on their belief on resistance?
I think if Yemen continues its active resistance against Israel and maintains a confrontational stance against Western powers and their allies, it risks becomes, a predominant target for military operations and Israeli strikes. But at the same time, their defiance has continued and has prolonged way in which Israel is operating at the moment against their defense. So at the end of the day, I feel that even with all the infrastructure resources that are being ruined and their ports and airports, it also affects Israel. And Yemen's alignment with even Iran is also something which is to be feared. And that's why it will continue. Yemen could emerge as a stronger player in the anti-Israel and anti-Western axis of resistance alongside other groups. And even its missile and drone capabilities have already demonstrated significant reach, and its commitment to Palestine aligns with the broader resistance narrative. So it could really have regional power shifts favor to the axis due to the warnings. But at the same time, I feel that the global pro-Palestinian solidarity grows, Yemen's outspoken support for Palestine could bolster its international standing among nations and move advocating for self-determination as well as resistance to imperialism. I think their stance is really strong, and they are continuing. And even though their country is also reliant on humanitarian aid, it seems like the poorer countries and the ones that have the less even billions of dollars are the ones to be strongest, because they don't just rely on that. There is something much more powerful and divine about Yemen compared to anywhere else. And it shows in its resistance at this very moment in time.
Right. And Sayed Mohsen and Ansarullah leaders have reiterated for several times all the time that they are not going to stop the reprisal attacks on Israeli, on Israel and American interests unless the aggression on Gaza stops. What do you think the outlook for the region seems to be right now?
The outlook is really being dictated at the moment, it seems, of course, by American imperialism and Israeli plans for the greater Israel. That's obsession, and that desperation and their fear of being kicked out of West Asia is driving a conflict, is driving war. Their greed for the oil and all the other resources in that region, and their habit of dominating West Asia is obviously one they're not going to let go easily. So they're going to fight tooth and nail. So I see more conflict. I see them triggering more conflict. I see them deluding themselves into getting deeper into war in that region. I think the wider reality is that, of course, they haven't defeated the axis of resistance. You know, they're now opening up this Yemeni front. That's fair enough. But, you know, just today, Hezbollah have announced that, the 60-day so-called ceasefire or peace treaty they've agreed to isn't non-expendable. Basically, if the Israelis don't move out, and that's what they're saying, they're not going to move out of southern Lebanon, and they're not making any moves to do that, then Hezbollah said that get ready for a storm, get ready for an explosive response. So Hezbollah is far from finished. Iran is certainly far from finished, as the Western media and the Israeli Hasbara would have us all believe. And Yemen is still strong. So the reality is that the only minor success they've had is Syria. And Syria was not really, I would say, a confrontational or offensive tool in the resistance axis kit. They were predominantly just facilitating the support of axis of resistance fighters in Hezbollah and beyond. They weren't leading the axis in any way militarily. So now we've got a situation where Israel may really overstep the mark, or on the other hand, the US under Trump could be drawn in to stamp its authority. Where does that leave Russia? Where does that leave China? Where does that leave the Belt Road Initiative and all the other Eurasian Axis agendas in that region? One doesn't know. You have to look at how Russia and China would also respond to a complete American victory in West right. Asia. Would they allow it? We don't know.
I'm going to borrow the words, the U.S.'s involvement in Yemen at the moment, because it seems like, that wherever Israel goes, the U.S. follows at the moment. What do you think these recent attacks on Yemen that the U.S. have proudly claimed is going to stand in alignment with broader political foreign objectives of the U.S. in the region, in the West Asia?
Well, I think Yemen could capitalize on growing anti-Western sentiment in the Arab world to push for a renewed sense of Arab unity against foreign intervention and Israeli aggression. Also, they could be shifting global trade and energy policies. Yemen's strategic position near Bab el-Mandeb Strait could become an asset if stability is sort of achieved. Yemen's ability to assert itself regionally depends on resolving internal conflicts, but obviously without a unified framework, this influence remains limited. But the pressure is there, and balancing its role in the resistance axis as well as the need to address domestic challenges will be a delicate sort of way of acting. The over-reliance just only on the resistance as well is also compromised for its sovereignty. However, Yemen could play a key role in controlling critical shipping routes and facilitating international trade if stability is achieved. So leading the pro-Palestinian cause is one of, you know, Yemen is one of the most vocal supporters of Palestine, literally, and Yemen has the opportunity to shape regional discourse and inspire solidarity movements with the power that it has right now geographically. And I think that Yemen could find pathways to stabilize while maintaining its principles and stance over sovereignty and justice.
Thank you so much. Wishing you both a very happy 2025, despite the situations that we have in the region. Very good to have you on the program. Once again, Fahima Mohammed, broadcaster and commentator, joining us from London, and Sayed Mohsen Abbas, journalist and political commentator, also from London. Thank you so much for being with us. This was another Spotlight. Wishing you all a happy 2025.
Choose to think better. Welcome to a better you. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en.
I'm a teacher.
I'm a researcher.
I'm a mother.
I'm a lawyer.
And I believe in acting kindly toward you, because you are...
A Muslim lady.
You are very special. There's no one just like you. You are very special, and I'm so glad you're mine.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear ladies. Welcome back to a new episode of your very favorite Muslim lady. This is Asma. I have the honor to be your host, and again, I have the pleasure to be at the service of Sister Zainab. Welcome to the studio.
Assalamu alaikum. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for coming here. I would like you to give us a very brief introduction about yourself for those people who have just joined us.
All right. I'm Turfatul and Zainab Askari, and I am from Kashmir, which is under Indian administration. And I have been living in Iran for some past 9 years now. And I have studied a master's in linguistics. And I have also I'm also engaged in the Hausa studies. And at the same time, I'm teaching.
That's great. Well, for today's episode, we're going to be talking about something, I guess, very common to women. Because they're so kind and because they're so caring and because they care for everybody, sometimes they come to the point that they forget about themselves. And this is the most horrible thing anyone could do to themselves. Specifically in this very exclusive situation that we're talking about, Muslim lady, the case is a lady. The lady that forgets about herself. And we come up with this notion of self-suppression in women. They forget about their happiness. They do not prioritize themselves over every other staff or over every other person and individual in their lives. And that's when sometimes even they don't know it. Like, you have to sit with them and you tell them, okay, why don't you care about yourself? Why aren't you taking your time to take care of your own self?
Yeah.
Why this happens to them?
I would say while it's very important to acknowledge that the external pressures, the systematic challenges, or the society contributes to a woman's feeling of like...
So it's not a one-dimensional issue.
Yeah. So I said like while all these factors are there on one side, it's also true at the same time that the women themselves engage in behaviors that inhibit their own, suppression.
Yeah.
From a culture that I have come, for example, I would say from a very young age, we were often socialized to prioritize the needs and well-being of others over our own. Mm-hmm. Right? I lived in a society, I was brought up in a society where I would see like women sacrificing their own, like they prioritizing.
So would you be teaching the same thing to your daughter?
Never. Never, ever. Islam never tells you to do that. Like I should.
Exactly. Even Islam does not make it as a compulsory rule on women to cook food in the home.
Right. It's like, you know, we talk about monotheism, we talk about polytheism, and we say that in today's world, there is no, like people have come to this realization, the, you know, the ideology has increased, the intellectual level has increased. So they no more worship the idols. So it could be said that polytheism is less. No, mm-hmm. It has taken another form. Like, for example, now people who have power or feel like they are someone, they think like, okay, they exhibit everything else and they have control over others. And this is polytheism, you know, and today's world, this is polytheism. And you yourself as a woman are getting into this when you are prioritizing others, I would say, or their needs, the societal needs, the norms,
everybody's need, but needs, yourself.
Not yourself. No, no. You have to prioritize someone in your life that's only Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala.
Exactly.
And his rules and his commands.
Yeah,
not like, okay, society told me these are some of the norms and you have to suppress yourself for this. Islam has no place for this. Had this been true in Islam, there was no concept of divorce.
Exactly.
There was no concept of rights. There was no concept of women rights, right? So, but like we have so much about women rights. We have so much about paying respect to women. Like Prophet would stand up for Lady Zahra Salaamu Alaihi. He would give her his place. He would tell her, sit next to me in an ignorant Arab time, like when they would use to bury the daughter. So like we were shown the women rights, women position by Islam. I can't again go back to the dark ages and say like, okay, society, dear society, you decide for me what is my right. When should I suffocate or suppress myself?
So culturally, yes, maybe culturally we have always been recommended to go for the needs and benefits of others rather than ourselves. But Islamically speaking, things are not the same. In the Islamic, based on actually the Islamic heritage that we have and based on the narrations of Ahlul Bayt alayhimus salam, there is no way for you to ignore your own happiness as a woman. You should care for yourself and you must devote a special time to prioritize your own needs for yourself, to take care of yourself. We go for a break and then we'll come back to see, as a mother, as a Muslim mother, if you want to teach your daughter this very thing from a very early time in her life, how would you teach her that your happiness matters so much? Yes, dear darling, your happiness matters so much. And as a little kid, you have to know this and you have to learn it. And it must become your background noise, like your own happiness and your own serendipity matters so much for everybody. But how would you teach that to your daughter as a Muslim lady? And how would you promote it for other mothers? Like, how would you encourage other mothers to teach it to their daughters?
I would say first thing is, do not go for self-denial, mm-hmm. You know, because like pursuing passions and live happily, to have joy is not forbidden thing.
Exactly.
Okay.
This is very important.
If your culture, if your society is teaching you that, this is not in harmony with Islam.
Exactly.
Okay. Islam nowhere came and said that, okay, men are authorized to be happy and women are not.
Mm-hmm.
No.
You should always deny yourself as a woman because you have to take care of others.
Yeah,
there has never been such a concept.
There has never been such a concept. Like even in terms of like, I would say this division of labor, when Lady Zahra Salaamu Alaiha tells Prophet, peace be upon him and his pure family, to divide the labor between us, he divides it. He does not tell Fatima to go for, okay, You also handle the external affairs, you also handle the internal affairs, and you handle each and everything. He gives them based on their nature of creation, so he distributes the work and she's also happy with it. I would suggest my daughter, my sister, any woman, don't go for self-denial. Mm-hmm. We are not here for... In fact, Imam Ali alayhi salam says that know yourself. Knowing yourself is knowing God.
Exactly.
Man arafa nafsa faqad arafa rabba, you know?
And knowing God and your Lord actually starts from you yourself, knowing yourself.
Yeah, so like when you are denying yourself, how are you going to recognize yourself,
exactly.
Right? And
very
when
true.
You're not going to recognize yourself, how are you going to recognize your potential?
So the first thing is the recognition of the self.
And because Islam doesn't want you to stay home. Mm-hmm. Islam wants you to come out, contribute to the society. We have the concept
and
of hijab.
And have an active role.
Yeah, we have the concept of hijab, right? Mm-hmm. Do we have the concept of hijab? Like you stay home, you suppress yourself, you stay in one corner and also observe hijab? No, you have to observe hijab to feel secure when you're coming out and contributing
to
the society.
To play an active role.
Right? So that means Islam is telling you basically mm-hmm. to be... Come on, be active, show your potential, right?
Yeah.
Do not suppress yourself,
show up. And by
the
way, even if your choice is to stay at home as a housewife or as a mother,
yeah.
which is a job in itself,
yes.
You shouldn't stay there just like doing nothing. You have been recommended and suggested to enlighten yourself.
See, this is very beautiful. We have from Imam Ali alayhi salam that a woman is like a flower.
Mm-hmm.
He does not say like she's a flower when she's young. She's always a flower.
Exactly.
If you,
in different seasons.
Right. If you even as a like when you have the pious role of being a housewife, a homemaker, which is I would say it's literally the most pious job in my eyes. But if you see this as like, okay, I'm the security guard. I have to fix things. I am a worker here and I have to cook and
I'm a food
clean.
Maker, I'm a slave to my yeah. children, whatever.
You would that never be content in your life.
Exactly.
You rather consider yourself as a jihadist, as a mujahid, as a struggler in the way of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. I am doing this to please Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala.
Even in that occasion, you have to devote some time for yourself. We have talked about it many times
yeah,
in
yeah.
Muslim Lady. It's not like you're a wife and you're a housewife. You're doing nothing. No, you shouldn't stay idle just caring for the food of your children or for the happiness of your family. Your happiness also matters. Like you have to read books, enlighten yourself, or I don't know, take part, participate in different courses to enlighten yourself. It's
right.
not just about having... If you go out for work, you would go out. Otherwise, you're staying at home doing nothing.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Muslim Lady.
See, Imam Khomeini, rahmatullah alayhi, says it very beautifully that when you are a mother, you are a nurturer, and you are nurturing a society, you are nurturing a nation in your lap.
Exactly.
Don't feel like I'm staying home and I'm just bringing up kids. No, no, no. You are bringing up a society. You're nurturing a society.
You
for
are
tomorrow.
Actually creating the building block
blocks
for
of,
the society.
Yeah, indeed. So, like, don't feel like you're not... doing something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so do not neglect your potential. Even if you're doing those works like...
Exactly. This is the main point. Do not neglect your potentials and yourself. And do not ignore this idea of flourishing yourself.
Yeah, I'm trying to say here that do not belittle. If you are a homemaker, if you are someone who is nurturing kids, do not belittle this job.
Mm-hmm.
This is a... You are... nurturing a society if you're nurturing a kid. Another thing women happen to suppress themselves is the concerns they have about how people will perceive them. They have this fear of
judgment.
But
does that matter?
Of course not.
Really, it doesn't matter. Because at the end of the day, I always say it in all the discussions that as human beings, we are lonesome travelers. The only thing that we have and we're going to carry with us is my own deeds and my connection with my God.
Mark my words. You will always meet the people who will downplay your achievements.
Exactly.
Who will downplay your passions, who will downplay your joys, and they will tell you only have to fit the societal expectations.
And norms.
And I'm telling you, if you're doing that, if you're suppressing yourself, you are into the polytheism. You're not considering God to be the entire power. Now you are getting suppressed.
Yeah.
And this is polytheism, I would say.
Mm-hmm. So you mean that there are many lords for you. One of these lords is how people
are going
to perceive
you. Society is my lord
you.
Now. I would tell you what happens today is this is a most common thing, I would say. You would see many women working at the retail shops as the cashiers.
Mm-hmm.
And these departmental stores expect them to be being there in full makeup with less clothes or, I don't know, less hijab and all, objectified.
There are some requirements.
Right. If you, to earn money, accept all those conditions, Allah is not your Lord now. Because these conditions are nowhere in line with Islam.
And by the way, this is a modern version of a slavery.
Yes, it is.
Because
it is.
I have the right to be the way I am. By the way, I have to say that this topic has got a lot of different details attached to it. But time does not let us to go for much more of details. Anyway, it was fruitful, even up until now, to recognize women's self-denied happiness or potential is a very important thing. Never forget about your happiness or about your potentials just because of society, just because of norms, and just because of the cultural pressures that have been imposed on you. So this was all. Thank you, Sister Zainab, and thank you, dear listeners. I hope you have enjoyed today's episode. Until another session, I bid you farewell. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
I know I'm waiting for something to happen to me. But this waiting comes with trials and challenges. Nothing in life is free.
The sun to come out and shine on my
beside people. In the name of God, the all-compassionate, the all-merciful. Hello and welcome to the program. Martyr Qasem Soleimani was not only a well-known military commander and an able diplomat, he also left deep impact on anyone who knew him, worked with him, or visited him. In this episode of the special program on General Soleimani, we are going to review his popularity and his conspicuous characteristics. He was living with people and considered himself as one of the people and even inferior to others. Stay tuned, please. Martyr Qasem Soleimani, the late commander of the IRGC Quds Force, was always among the people and for the people. He never considered himself separate from people and was among them both in the front and in the back. He would listen to people's problems and try to help them as much as he could. Qasem Soleimani disliked formalities, and as far as the security protocols permitted, he kept direct relation with people. He used to speak with people and combatants. He would encourage them to make more efforts and would spend time with them even in the heat of critical junctures. This habit led to deep trust of military forces and ordinary people in him, not just in Iran, but in the entire region. He paid special attention to those who were in battlefronts and their families. When he returned from the front, he would usually pay a visit to the families of martyrs, as he said, "These families have sacrificed their hearts for the country, and we must never neglect them." He did his best to solve the problems of the families of martyrs and paid very high respect to the parents of the martyrs. Martyr Soleimani was very humble with people. He never considered himself superior to others. Instead of displaying power or his position as a top military commander, he emphasized human principles and a spirit of sympathy. This feature made everyone love him sincerely. He was very resilient in tough conditions and would look for a solution for every problem. General Soleimani not only paid attention to military and security issues, but also was very concerned about and thoughtful of social and economic issues. Once he said, "Protection of the country does not mean merely guarding of borders. We should rather take heed of protecting people's life and welfare too." Martyr Qasem Soleimani paid special attention to the poor and war-torn regions. He tried to attract financial assistance from various organizations to tackle people's economic problems. This had made a sympathetic and kind-hearted personality of him in people's minds. Haj Qasem taught us to pay attention to people's needs even during wartime and social crises. His popularity and close relation with people made him a role model of a unique commander and a selfless human being for society. One of the near ones of Martyr Soleimani recalls a memory of him. In a trip to the southern regions of Iran, he paid a visit to a group of combatants of the Eight-Year War and local people. There were hard conditions, and the ruins of the war had not been reconstructed yet. After meeting with military commanders, Martyr Soleimani, alongside some of his companions, went to a house which had been damaged in the war in a village in the southern parts of the country. An old woman called Mother Fatemeh was living there. He had lost his two sons in the war. She was waiting for the officials of the IRGC with a small vase with a flower in it. Haj Qasem went into the house with no formality and talked with the old woman. Mother Fatima said with tears in her eyes, "We have no one. We have just these flowers to put by the tombs of my sons. We are very lonely." Martyr Soleimani said very humbly and kindly, "You are not lonely. You are in the hearts of all people of Iran. We all have you in our hearts and will never forget you." Then he ordered one of his companions to take measure for reconstruction of the house and catering for the needs of the family. He personally looked into the situation of the families of martyrs and invalids in the war-torn regions and pursued their problems closely. Martyr Lieutenant Qasem Soleimani has remained in the hearts of people as the role model of human characteristics and a unique hero.